اوكي، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. I hope you remember what we said before after this very long break. I mentioned that after 3 years of private invitation and da'wah, private and secret invitation and da'wah, the Prophet, peace be on him, was commanded by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to open up the da'wah. And since the third year when the Prophet opened up the da'wah, until the seventh year when the kuffar decided, yes, you can't hear me, okay. Fine. Then my voice was very loud for gentlemen here. Until the seventh year, when the Mushrikun completely decided to boycott Banu Hashim, in the period of 4 years, they made all efforts to dissuade the Prophet from continuing with his message, or to persuade Abu Talib from to stop his support for Muhammad, peace be on him. So there were lots of efforts. I have just classified a few of those efforts. Of course, there are many, many different references in the verses of the Quran to those efforts. I've just brought a few examples of that so that we might somehow get the feeling of how Quran is somehow attached very closely to the history of the life of the Prophet. Now, the first type of tactics used by Mushrikun was suggestions to Abu Talib. Of course, at that time Muhammad was had just started his da'wah. They thought it's useless to go and speak to the Prophet, peace be on him. So the best thing was to persuade Abu Talib not to support the Prophet. As soon as Abu Talib would have withdrawn his support from the Prophet, peace be on him, then it was very easy for other sub-tribes of Quraysh to kill the Prophet. So they went with different suggestions to Abu Talib. They said, you withdraw your support from Muhammad and we make you the king of all Mecca and the vicinities. Well, of course, he did not accept. They said that if you do not stop supporting, we will fight you all, Banu Hashim, because we are many, many sub-tribes. You are very, you have very limited number, and we will fight you to the end. And of course, Abu Talib did not was not discouraged. However, in that instance, when they said that we are going to fight Banu Hashim, because there was that danger that when the Banu Hashim was being fought against by other tribes, they were defeated, certainly, because there were a really limited number. Of course, there was bloodshed. But there was that danger that Prophet would have been killed as well in that type of battle. So Abu Talib went to Muhammad, peace be on him, to the Prophet, and said that, look, these people have come here. They have told me that if your nephew is after wealth, we give him wealth. If he's after authority and he wants to be a king or a chief or whatever, we will give him that. But if he does not accept, we are going to fight him and fight Banu Hashim. And what do you say? Now, Prophet thought that Abu Talib is somehow afraid and he wanted to withdraw his support from him. So the very famous sentence of the Prophet, which is mentioned everywhere, he said that my uncle, if they put sun in my right hand and the moon in my left hand, let alone things belonging to the wealth of this earth, I am not going to stop my da'wah and my call. And then Abu Talib said, you could be reassured, all of us are with you, so continue with what you want to do. These were the suggestions coming to Abu Talib. Now, after this failed, they tried to somehow intimidates people to convert to Islam or to try to persuade those who had already converted to revert back to idol worshipping. Therefore, every tribe decided, they agreed with each other, that every tribe would torture, persecute, and put under pressure their fellow tribesmen who had accepted Islam. And in this sense, if a tribe wanted to punish one of its members, there was no one to help, because the tribe had full authority over the members of the tribe. So, for example, if a sub-tribe of Quraysh decided to, for example, if Banu Makhzum wanted to punish one of their members, no other tribe would have ever intervened. It was none of their business. There was no support, no wilaya over them. So this was the best method to somehow dissuade other people to convert to Islam. However, this tactic also did not work, because the Muslims were those young people who had converted to Islam. They were so committed that they accepted all types of tortures without reverting back to idol worshipping. The extent of the tortures were so much that many of Muslims verbally, they said, okay, we do not believe in Islam anymore, we do not believe in one God anymore. Even it said that when a cockroach was moving on the ground, they said, this is your God. They said, yes, this is our God. Whatever you say is our God. Because the torture was very, very extensive. However, they did believe in the heart. And this was something which is mentioned in the Quran as well. I mentioned the example of that. Now, two examples I have chosen to talk about with regards to these tortures. One was about Khabbab ibn al-Arat. Of course, Prophet and Banu Hashim here could not help, because these were, as I said, fellow tribesmen. And Banu Hashim had no authority. They could not torture members of Banu Hashim. And this is why actually Prophet later on decided to send these people to Abyssinia, to Habasha, because he said that I am under protection of my tribe, but these Muslims have no protection. So he decided to send them to Abyssinia. Now, one of these people was Khabbab ibn al-Arat. He's a very famous companion of the Prophet, one of the first 10 people who converted to Islam, a young man who converted to Islam with great commitment. It is the details of how they tortured him is mentioned in the history. For example, some of the tortures that they actually applied to Khabbab was that they put on a very heavy armor on him in very heated days, and they made him to sit on the hot rocks for the whole day. And you can imagine, a person could have been cooked inside that armor under the sun, under the heat of the sun. The other type of torture that they used to give to Khabbab was to make lots of fire with wood, and after the fire had gone, but the wood was red hot, they used to make Khabbab to sleep on those woods, or on the charcoal now, which was red, and someone came and sat on his chest, or put his feet on his chest, until the whole charcoal were completely out of fire or out of heat. And that's why Khabbab didn't have, later on Khabbab didn't have any meat, any flesh on his back. It was terrible to look at his back. And once at the time of Umar ibn Khattab, the second caliph, people were talking about the ways that they were tortured at the time of Jahiliyyah, and Khabbab showed his back to Umar ibn Khattab. And Umar said, I never have seen such a thing in my life happening to a person. It was so drastic and dramatic that it was an example of the most difficult tortures. And this is why prophets used to pray all the time for Khabbab. He knew that he was under tremendous pressure and torture. Prophet couldn't do anything about it. You can imagine the psychological type of pressure that all these brought to the Prophet. He couldn't just do anything. He just used to say, Allahumma ansur Khabbaban. God, please help Khabbab. And there's a very interesting story here. Khabbab was actually a slave man of an old woman. And that old woman was a very cruel old woman, old lady. And when Khabbab converted to Islam, he used to heat some iron bar and put it on his head. And of course, Khabbab had lost all the skin on his head as well because of those iron bars being put on his head. And when Prophet said, Allahumma ansur Khabbaban, Lord, please help Khabbab, something happened to that old lady. This is mentioned in the history. She was affected by a sort of disease, like migraine or something, which brought a very, very harsh and terrible headache for her. And the physician told her that the only way you can somehow reduce your headache is by heating some iron bars and putting it on your head. And she used to ask Khabbab to do it for her. In fact, what Khabbab was the way he was being persecuted by that lady, Allah made that to be reversed on her. And Khabbab used to put that iron bar on her head by her request. And this was something which was the fulfillment of the prayer of the Prophet, peace be on him, supplication of the Prophet, Allahumma arham Khabbaba. There is a reference to Khabbab in Nahjul Balagha as well. Amirul Mu'mineen says that يَرْحَمُ اللَّهُ خَبَّابَ بْنِ الْعَرَكِ قَدْ أَسْلَمَ رَاقِبًا وَحَاجَرَ طَائِعًا وَقَنَعَ بِالْكَفَافِ وَرَضِيَ عَنِ اللَّهِ وَعَاشَ مُجَاهِدًا. May God have mercy on Khabbab. Verily he entered Islam with enthusiasm and migrated in obedience. He was satisfied with the least sustenance and was pleased with God and lived as a mujahid. As, of course, the history is a witness for that. Now, there's another story of Khabbab, which a reference in the Quran has been made to it. Khabbab, although he was a slave man, he had the profession of making swords. And he had made some swords for Asr ibn Wa'il. And owed the payment to Khabbab. And when Khabbab went and asked for what he had done for us, he said, are you not the Muslim who is hated by everyone? Khabbab said, this is irrelevant. I have done some work for you, you have to pay me. He said, I'm not going to pay you. When he insisted, he said, do you not believe that we are going to be alive after death? He said, yes. He said, do you not believe that we are going to go to paradise and having some lots of wealth and these things? He said, yes. He said, okay, when I come to paradise, I give you several times of what I owe you here. Just making radical, mocking the belief of Khabbab. And in Surah Maryam, there is a reference to Asr ibn Wa'il here. أَفَرَأَيْتَ الَّذِي كَفَرَ بِآيَاتِنَا وَقَالَ لَأُوتَيَنَّ مَالًا وَوَلَدًا أَطَّلَعَ الْغَيْبَ أَمِ اتَّخَذَ عِنْدَ الرَّحْمَنِ أَحْدًا كَلَّا سَنَكْتُبُ مَا يَقُولُ وَنَمُدُّ لَهُ مِنَ الْعَذَابِ مَدًّا. Have you not regarded him who defies our signs and said, I will surely be given wealth and children? Because he used to say, if you are going to be given wealth and children in paradise, certainly I'm going to be given several times that you are going to be given. Who are you? You are a slave man? I am one of the nobility of Quraysh, so I'm certainly going to be given. So Allah here mocks him. He says that I will surely be given wealth and children. Has he come to know the unseen or taken a promise from the all beneficent? No, indeed, we will write down what he says, and we will prolong his punishment endlessly. The other instance of cruel torture is what all of you know, Ammar ibn Yasir and his brother and his parents, his mother and his father. you know, his parents were the first martyrs of Islam. They were both killed under torture. His brother, Abdullah ibn Yasir, as well was killed under torture. Now, for Ammar, the tortures were so terrible that, as I said, in many instances, they were forced to say whatever they wanted. And in the case of Ammar, it happened that they said, you have to reject belief in one God and in Muhammad. And he said, okay, whatever you say, I do. And he rejected. They released him. After they released him, he became very, very upset, difficult. He felt very difficult, agony in his heart. He went to the Prophet in tears and said that I have said the word of kufr, but I did not intend to say it. It was under pressure that I said it. And then the verse, very famous verse of Taqiyya, was revealed for his case. من كفر بالله من بعد إيمانه إلا من أكره وقلبه مطمئن بالإيمان ولكن من شرح بالكفر صدرا فعليهم غضب من الله. Of course, whoever reversed back to kufr after faith, Allah will have his wrath on them, but not those who have faith in the heart, but they are forced to say the word of kufr by their tongues. So whoever denounces his faith in Allah after affirming their faith, not of course he who is compelled while his heart is at rest in faith, but those who open up their breasts to unfaith, upon such shall be the wrath of God, and there is great punishment for them. And it was on this occasion that Prophet, peace be on him, stated lots of statements of praise about Ammar, and that Iman never goes out of his heart, that he is someone who is always with faith, and the other praises of Ammar. Now, after all these, it is mentioned in the history that despite the severe torture of Muslims at that time, which lasted for probably about 3 years, because then Muslims started to migrate to Abyssinia because of the pressure, among many hundreds of people who had converted to Islam and were put under torture, only 5 people reverted back to kufr. Really reverted back, not in the sense that they just said it by their tongues. They reverted back to kufr. Only 5 people. And this was insignificant. Putting all these pressure on their slaves, on their fellow tribesmen, and getting such an insignificant result was not something that, of course, would have satisfied the mushrikun. So the other measure that they thought would be useful was going directly to the Prophet. They had now come to know that going to Abu Talib is useless. Abu Talib is not listening to them. And the only way is that they would convince the Prophet himself. So they made suggestions to the Prophet. Now, the suggestions came on different occasions from different, very, very noble and prominent people. But it could be summarized in 3 things. First, they told him that if you do this because of wealth, because you want money, we fill your house with gold and silver. Just say how much and we give you. Don't worry about money. If you do this because you want to have some sort of authority or rulership, we make you our king. These suggestions show, the interesting thing about these suggestions is that the success of the prophets was so enormous that they were ready to give kingdom to someone who had fought against them, who had somehow humiliated them, and of course it was not easy to give kingdom to such a person. However, they didn't want everyone to convert to this new religion. So they said, if you want kingdom, we will give it to you. If you think that you are possessed by jinn or by whatever, we use all our wealth to kill you. We take you to every position in the world so that you are healed and cured. So what is the response? Well, of course, Prophet said, sorry, of course, my message is from Allah. I have brought you the best thing that a man of your tribe could bring for you. So you better accept Islam rather than suggesting these things. Then they started to demand in a way to psychologically undermine the Prophet's message. Now, there are different references in the Quran about what they demanded from the Prophet. And they did it publicly. For example, around Kaaba. Whenever Prophet went to Kaaba, to Masjid al-Haram to pray, they came to him and they said, if you are a prophet of God, do this if you are in front of everyone. And of course, this was undermining the authority of the Prophet over what he claimed, that's the connection with God. So one instance is what is mentioned in Surah Al-Isra. Sorry, I have forgotten to put the verse numbers. It's Surah towards the end of Surah Al-Isra. These verses are mentioned. وَقَالُوا لَن نُؤْمِنَ لَكَ حَتَّى تَفْجُرَ لَنَا مِنَ الْأَرْضِ يَنْبُوَى. Once all of them were sitting, Abu Jahl, Abu al-Bakhtari, As ibn Wa'il, Nadr ibn Haris, and others, they were sitting. And they started, well, they actually sent someone after the Prophet. And Prophet thought that there is a new suggestion. He was happy he came to them. They said, you do not accept our offers. But we have new offers or suggestions to you, that if you could somehow respond positively, then we would believe it. Then they start. One of them said, look, this land in which we live is very arid, barren, no water. We are surrounded by mountains, and we cannot have a nice area for living. Can you somehow take these mountains away so that we have a very nice land like Iraq or Syria, that we have fountains and gardens and these things? Well, the Prophet said, I have not been sent to do these things. I'm just a messenger of God. They said, okay, if you don't do this for us, do it for yourself, just as a sign. Why don't you have a good garden, a palace, and all these things? Make something like that for yourself, and then you would believe in you. Again, Prophet said, I cannot do these things. I am only a messenger. I have brought a message for you. You respond positively. You will have the khair of this world and the next world. They said, okay, you don't accept this. You say that you have a message from God. Why don't you go back, go up to the heavens to God, come back with some angels to testify that you are his messenger? Again, the Prophet said, it's impossible. He said, okay, can you bring down some parts of the sky on us, as you say, you threaten us that if you do not believe, this would happen to us. And you can imagine, as I said, people coming together, making such suggestions, such demands from the Prophet, and Prophet all the time saying that, I cannot do this. And they, in this way, they wanted, as I said, to undermine what Prophet claimed. Now, it's very beautifully put, of course, in Surah Al-Isra. It's very interesting that Quran is somehow not afraid of bringing the propaganda of the enemies of the Prophet. And you will see that all the propaganda of the enemies of the Prophet are mentioned in the Quran itself. وَقَالُوا لَن نُؤْمِنَ لَكَ حَتَّى تَفْجُرَ لَنَا مِنَ الْأَرْضِ يَنْبُوَى. They say, we will not believe you until you make a spring gush for us from the ground. The first suggestion, or the first demand. Or until you have a garden of date palms and vines and you make streams gush through it. For yourself, at least. Or until you cause the sky to fall in fragments upon us, just as you would believe. Or until you would bring Allah and the angels right in front of us. Or until you have a house of gold, or you ascend to the sky, and we will not believe your ascension until you bring down for us a book that we may read. Say, قُلْ سُبْحَانَ رَبِّي هَلْ كُنْتُ إِلَّا بَشَرًا رَسُولًا. Say, Immaculate is our Lord. Am I anything but a human apostle? And these instances were very frequent. And even in the at the time of Hajj, when Prophet, it was the high time for the Prophet to go and preach among different tribes. These demands were made to the Prophet that if you are a Prophet, why don't you do such things? The other efforts made by Mushrikun was the decision of Abu Jahl to assassinate the Prophet. Of course, it was very dangerous because then all Banu Hashim would have somehow demanded the Prophet's blood from Abu Jahl. But he was so angry of the Prophet that one day he said that tomorrow when he comes to pray in Masjid al-Haram, I will bring a huge rock and I will just throw it on his head and I will kill him. And you have to promise me that you protect me against Banu Hashim. Many prominent people in Quraysh said, okay, we will... They didn't want to have the blood on their hands, but they said, okay, we will protect you. You do it, we will protect you. Now, tomorrow, when the Prophet came, as it was his habit, he went to Masjid al-Haram, in front of that wall of Kaaba, which is between Rukn al-Yamani and Hajar al-Aswad, which faces... Baytul Maqdis, Jerusalem, because the Qibla was Jerusalem, was not Kaaba, certainly at that time. He started to pray. Now, it is said that Abu Jahl had brought a huge rock in the mosque. And when Prophet went to prostration, he went and took that rock to throw it on his head. But people saw that he was going back and just throwing the rock somewhere else and run away. When he was asked about it, he said that when I decided to do that to Muhammad, I saw a huge camel coming towards me with a very, very ugly appearance. And he was almost taking me in his mouth. And I was so terrified that I just had to run away. Now, the verses which are said to refer to this incident. Of course, there is no mention of that camel or whatever Abu Jahl has mentioned. أرأيت الذي ينهى. The verses in Surah Alaq. أبداً إذا صلى. Have you seen he who forbids a servant when he prays? Because he wanted to kill the Prophet while he was praying. Tell me, should he be under true guidance or bid others to God-wariness? Well, if it means that if Muhammad, if the Prophet, is on true guidance, what if Abu Jahl wanted to kill him? What is then his response or his responsibility towards God? Tell me, should he call him a liar and turn away? Does he not know that Allah sees? No, indeed, if he does not stop, we shall seize him by the forelock, a lying, wicked forelock. Then let him call out his gang. We too shall call the keepers of the hell. فَلْيَدْعُ نَادِيَهْ فَنَدْعُ الزَّبَانِيَهْ Zabaniyah, of course, the keepers of the hell. And, of course, this became true in the Battle of Badr when Abu Jahl was killed. And the same thing happened. The other thing was suggestion of Nadr ibn Haris and travel to Yathrib. Now, after all these measures failed, Nadr ibn Haris suggested that we better somehow falsify the claim of the Prophet by going to the people of the book, because they have more knowledge than us and about these things, and we can go and ask them. This Nadr ibn Haris was a very cultured and educated man, but very, very obstinate, and someone for whom there are many, many references in the Quran. First of all, he had traveled a lot, and he knew a lot about, especially the history of Persia. He knew those stories of Rustam and Suhrab and Isfandiyar, probably you have heard about them. And usually, when Prophet spoke about past history of those nations who were destroyed, like Ad and Thamud. After Prophet left, he went to the people and said, well, these are the stories of the past people. I have more interesting stories for you. And he started to say the stories of Rustam and Suhrab of Persia, which was actually more exotic for Arab people than those stories. And the reference for this is mentioned in Surah Luqman, in Surah Luqman, وَمِنَ النَّاسِ مَنْ يَشْتَرِي لَحْوَ الْحَدِيثِ. Quran, well, talks about those mythical stories as لَحْوَ الْحَدِيثِ. It's a very beautiful expression. لَحْوَ الْحَدِيثِ means a speech which is useless. It's just mythical history. So, وَمِنَ النَّاسِ مَنْ يَشْتَرِي لَحْوَ الْحَدِيثِ لِيُذِلَّ عَنْ سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ, to misguide people from the path of God. Also, because he was very, very much educated, Nadr ibn al-Harith, because he was very much educated, he claimed prophethood. He said, if this man is a prophet, I am a prophet. Whatever he informs you about, I can inform you. And there's a reference in Surah An'am about him, verse 92, وَمَنْ أَظْلَمُ مِمَّنْ افْتَرَى عَلَى اللَّهِ كَذِبًا. Who is more wrongdoer than someone who slanders, lies against God? وَقَالَ أُوحِيَ إِلَيَّ وَلَمْ يُوحَ إِلَيْهِ. And he says, revelation comes down to me as it comes down to Muhammad, and of course nothing has come down to him. And this Nadr ibn al-Harith, of course, he was captured in Battle of Badr, and he was one of those captives that Prophet ordered to be decapitated, because he was really, really mischievous, and someone who had done a lot against Muslims during those years in which they were in Mecca. Now, he suggests that what we do is to go to Yathrib, which was a city in which Jews were living, and of course later on became Madinah to Nabi, and we ask the Jews, tell us about the qualities of prophets, what questions we can put to him, if he's truthful, how could we know, if he's wrong, how should we know. So he, in the company of Uqbat ibn Abi Mu'ayt, another person who of course later on converted to Islam under duress, and then he was given rulership under Uthman, which created lots of objections from different parts, different quarters of Muslim state. Anyhow, with Uqbat ibn Abi Mu'ayt, he went to Yathrib, and the Jews suggested that to them, that you can put to him three questions, which if he is not a prophet, certainly he doesn't know anything about it, because this is something which even does not appear in our books. And if he answers two of the questions and rejects to answer the third, he's a prophet. If he answers all the questions, he's not a prophet. And if he's not able to answer any questions, of course he's not a prophet. The questions of course are all in Surah Al-Kahf. First of all, they said, ask him about the people of the cave. What is their story? Because no man would know about it if they are not connected to revelation. Secondly, ask him about the man who went to the east and the west and conquered all the lands, Zulqarnain. And thirdly, ask him about ruh. What is the nature of ruh? Spirit. Now, of course, not human spirit, the spirit which, of course, all of us partake a little bit of it. وَنَفَخْتُ فِيهِمْ الرُّوحِ. Ask him about this. If he knows what ruh is, if he tells you, he's a liar. But the other two, he should know the answer if he's a prophet. Now, they came to the prophet and they asked him, they put him the three questions. Now, there was a mishap there. And that is, prophet said, okay, come back tomorrow until I receive revelation from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And I will give you the answers. However, tomorrow, the revelation did not come. The day after tomorrow it did not come. Next week it did not come. And according to different reports, between 15 or 40 days, the revelation was delayed or stopped. In a way that, of course, in the second or third week, everyone thought that, well, he is not a prophet. If he was a prophet, he would have been given the revelation immediately. He should have answered the questions by receiving information from God. And this delay in revelation, we don't know what was the cause of it really. Of course, there is a reference to it in the Quran. Maybe something to be taught to Muslims, or somehow to try to put the Mushrikun in more fitna than they were, because they were so much reinforced in their disbelief, and so much happy because of what had happened, that it was a real trial for them by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Now, after several days, or perhaps several weeks, their revelations came. أَمْ حَسِبْتَ أَنَّ أَصْحَابَ الْكَهْفِ وَالرَّقِيمِ كَانُوا مِنْ آيَاتِنَا عَجَبًا. Have you, do you think that the people of the cave and people of the village of Raqim, which was close to that cave, are very amazing among our signs? And then there was an explanation of how they went to the cave, their number, how long they stayed there. And then after the story comes the verse, وَلَا تَقُولَنَّ لِشَيْءٍ إِنِّي فَاعِلٌ ذَلِكَ غَدًا. Never say that about something that I will do it tomorrow. Because apparently Prophet, just having the confidence that he would receive revelation, as a matter of course, he just said, I will inform you about these tomorrow. So the Quran says, وَلَا تَقُولَنَّ لِشَيْءٍ إِنِّي فَاعِلٌ ذَلِكَ غَدًا. Never say that I will do this tomorrow. إِلَّا أَن يَشَاءَ اللَّهِ. Put just one qualification there, that if God wills. Oh well, we don't know whether Prophet just forgot to say if God wills, or he just took it for granted. And there was, of course, a lesson coming here as well. Never say about something, I will do this tomorrow. إِلَّا أَن يَشَاءَ اللَّهِ. وَذْكُرْ رَبَّكَ إِذَا نَسِيْتَ. Apparently Prophet forgot to say, inshallah. Or just as I said, as a matter of course, he was confident that he was going to receive revelation about it. And you can see in this very, very crucial moment, it was not time to teach the Prophet or Muslim a lesson, was it? I mean, people had gone to Medina, brought some questions, and at that very, very crucial time, Allah said, wait a moment, I want to teach you a lesson. وَلَا تَقُولَنَّ لِشَيْءٍ إِنِّي فَاعِلٌ ذَلِكَ غَدًا. Never say that I'm going to do something tomorrow, إِلَّا أَن يَشَاءَ اللَّهُ, unless God wills. وَذْكُرْ رَبَّكَ إِذَا نَسِيتُ وَقُلْ عَسَىٰ أَن يَهْدِيَنِ رَبِّي لَأَقْرَبَ مِنْ هَذَا رَشَدًا. And say, I hope that Allah will guide me to higher guidance than what we have at the moment. The second question came in the same verse, of course. All the questions were answered in the same surah, Surah Al-Kahf, which probably has been revealed all together at once. The second question about Dhul-Qarnayn, وَيَسْأَلُونَكَ عَنْ Dhul-Qarnayn, and they ask you about Dhul-Qarnayn. قُلْ سَأَتْلُوا عَلَيْكُمْ مِنْهُ ذِكْرًا. Say, I will recite for you a mention of him, and then there is the description of Dhul-Qarnayn in Surah Al-Kahf. And then, وَيَسْأَلُونَكَ عَنِ الرُّوحِ. They ask you about ruh. قُلِ الرُّوحُ مِنْ أَمْرِ رَبِّي. Say, ruh is something which is related to the amr of the Lord. وَمَا أُوتِيتُم مِّنَ الْعِلْمِ إِلَّا قَلِيلًا. And you are not given much knowledge about it. So Prophet did not give any explanation about ruh, as the Jews had suggested that if he is a prophet, he should not answer this question. And he answered the other two questions. However, the lapse in between was somehow an issue of displeasure of mu'minun and pleasure of kuffar in the middle. So, this was also something which was, anyhow, after a fashion, was dealt with, bringing questions from the Jews to the Prophet, peace be upon him. Now, then came the suggestion of compromise. Of course, none of those measures worked. Then came the suggestion of compromise and revelation of Surah Al-Kafirun. Asad ibn al-Wa'il, Abu Jahl, and a few other prominent people of Quraysh, they went to the Prophet while he was in Tawaf. And they told him, let's end our enmities. You are insisting on your message, and we are insisting on the tradition of our forefathers. We ignore what you have done to us. You have said that we are mad, you have somehow humiliated our forefathers, you have criticized our traditions. We forget about that. We will worship the Lord, Allah, because they did not worship Allah, as I mentioned before. They thought that Allah is the creator, and he is higher than a God to be worshipped. We will worship Allah. And you worship our idols, or at least don't mention anything about them. Let us worship them. And there is some report, it said that, which is very improbable, that you worship our idols 1 year, we worship Allah the other year. But apparently this was not the way the suggestion was put. It was just, we worship Allah, you worship our idols, or you do not object worshiping idols. Which of course, this was an instance for the revelation of Surah Al-Kafirun. قُلْ يَا أَيُّهَا الْكَافِرُونَ. Of course, the answer came to the Prophet through the revelation. لَا أَعْبُدُ مَا تَعْبُدُونَ وَلَا أَنْتُمْ عَابِدُونَ مَا أَعْبُدُ. Say, O faithless ones, I do not worship what you worship, nor do you worship what I worship. Nor will I worship what you have worshipped, nor will you worship what I worship. To you, your religion, and to me, my religion. Of course, on those days, you know that Prophet was not forcing his religion on anyone. And there was no compulsion that Mushrikun should become Muslim. The compulsion was from the other side, that Muslimun should become Mushrik. And they did not tolerate Islam among themselves. Now, the other thing which is mentioned in many different ways in the history is recourse to Walid ibn al-Mughayrah. Walid ibn al-Mughayrah was a very old, noble, respected man of literature, of poetry, and someone who was somehow the authority in Arab literature. Now, usually the Prophet had his, as I said, high time of publicity and preaching at the time of Hajj. Probably around the fifth year of Ba'tha, 2 years after the Prophet had revealed his message, or had somehow publicized it. On the Mawsam of Hajj, people went to Walid ibn Mughayrah and said that this is Mawsam al-Hajj. People are going to come from different places, and Muhammad is certainly going to preach, and we cannot stop him. Now, people ask us, who is this man who are saying these things? Some of us say he is a poet, a shaykh. Some of us say he is a kahin, a sorcerer. Some of us say he is a mad person, a majnun. Some of us say that he is just possessed by jinn. And other things. People then think that we really don't know about this man, and they would become inclined to listen to him. So let's make one word of him, whether he's Sahir or Kahin or Sha'ir or whatever, and in the Mawsam we go around and talk to people and say that this man is either a magician, a sahir, or a sorcerer, a kahin, or a shah, or whatever. Well, he said, okay, give me time, I have to speak to him, and then I make my decision and tell you what word we have to unify upon. Now, it is said that the Prophet was sitting by Kaaba when Walid came to him and said, my son, read some of your poetry for me. And Muhammad said, I am not a poet. He said, okay, read from the Quran that you say is revealed to you. He started Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim before everything. He said, who is this Rahman? The man who lives in Yamama, who has a very odd name, Rahman. He said, no, Rahman is another name of Allah. And just mocking the Prophet, of course he knew what the Prophet meant. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. And he started to recite Surah Al-Fussilat, the Hameen Sajda, the Surah 41, from the beginning. Until he came to the verse. Of course, if you read the first page of Surah Fussilat, certainly in Arabic, you would see it's massive. It is it brings you under your charm the way the verses are put together. قُلْ أَإِنَّكُمْ لَتَكْفُرُونَ بِالَّذِي خَلَقَ الْأَرْضَ فِي يَوْمَيْنِ وَجَعَلَ فِيهَا رَوَاسِيَ. And do you disbelieve in the one who created the earth in 2 days, and then he attended to the skies and to the heavens and created the heaven? It is, I mean, for an Arab who is familiar with literature, with life by Ibn Mughira, this was something which brought shiver to his body. Until it came, the Prophet came to the verse, فَإِنْ أَعْرَضُوا فَقُلْ أَنذَرْتُكُمْ صَائِقَةً مِثْلَ صَائِقَةِ عَادٍ وَثَمُودَ. If they turn away, tell them, I warn you of a death like the death of Ad and Thamud. In this moment, it is mentioned that Walid started to shake and shiver. And he just stood up and went without saying anything. And he went home. He was ill for 3 days. And the rumors went around in Mecca that Walid ibn Mughira, he was the father of Khalid ibn Walid and Umarat ibn Walid, of whom I will talk later on. Walid has become a Muslim. So people went to his house. They said, you have let us down. We sent you to Muhammad to listen to him and then come to us and say, what should we say about him? And now you have become a Muslim. He said, who has told you that I have become a Muslim? They said, there's rumors everywhere. He said, no, that's wrong. I have not become a Muslim. I was ill a little bit. I was moved and shaken by the verses recited to me. But now I have come to the conclusion that what is it that Muhammad spells out to us? He said, what is it? He said, it's magic. It puts you under this charm, like it did to me. I was charmed. I was put under the spell for 3 days. And the reference to this is made in Surah Muzammil, Muddathir, Dharni, وَمَنْ خَلَقْتُ وَحِيدًا وَجَعَلْتُ لَهُ مَالًا مَمْدُودًا وَبَنِينَ شُهُودًا. Leave me with whom I created alone, and then furnished him with extensive means, and gave him sons to be at his side, and facilitated all matters for him. Still, he is eager that I should give him more. Now indeed, he is a forward opponent of our signs. Soon I will overwhelm him with hardship. Then, the reference to what happened when he went home and talked about the verses recited to him by the Prophet. Indeed, he reflected and decided. Perish he, how he decided. Then he pondered. Then he frowned and scowled. Then he went away disdainfully, saying, it is nothing but magic handed down. It is nothing but words of human being. Soon I shall cast him into Saqar. سَأُصْلِيهِ سَقَرْ وَمَا أَدْرَاكَ مَا سَقَرْ. And what will show you what is Saqar? It does not spare nor leave. Which are of course very frightening verses about, you cannot imagine a human being going into this type of destiny, whether Walid ibn Mughayr or anyone else. But this is what they had brought upon themselves. Now, the reaction of Muslims to persecutions, of course, persecutions I mentioned first, these other measures I mentioned afterwards, but the reaction of Muslims to persecutions was migration to Abyssinia. As I said, Prophet was agonized very much, seeing that he was protected by his family and other Muslims from other tribes. They didn't have anyone to protect them, because the tribes, authorities themselves, they put them under torture. So he suggested that they go to Abyssinia. Of course, Prophet didn't have any prior connection with the king of Abyssinia, or he did not write any letter to him, or whatever. He just told them, go to Abyssinia, there is a just ruler there, under whose rule everyone lives in peace. So apparently Prophet was given some sort of knowledge and information about the Najashi of Abyssinia at that time of Habasha. So he suggested Muslims go there. Of course, it was not an easy task to go, because those who were under torture, they knew that Mushrikun would go after them, try to catch them, bring them back. So they went undercover. They went to the port of Shu'aiba. There, they were very lucky. There was a ship which was just departing, and probably half an hour after they boarded on that ship, it departed and went. And when Mushrikun came to catch them and bring them back, they saw that the ship is gone. They were lucky in that. Now, in the first instance, it is mentioned that 11 men and 4 women, 15 people altogether, they migrated to Abyssinia. And then others followed. Of course, in some sources, it is mentioned there was 2 migrations to Abyssinia, the first migration and second migration, which is probably not very much supported by evidence. It was a gradual migration of people. So the first migration was, of course, in which 15 people migrated. Then, of course, people followed gradually. At the end, only about 100 people migrated there, because it was a very difficult type of route and a very hazardous type of trip, because of the surveillance of Mushrikun. At the end, 82 men and 19 women, excluding children, of course, migrated to Abyssinia. Now, Mushrikun, of course, reacted very strongly, because it was very dangerous. If Muslims went there, they started to preach there, if they could convince the Nagas, who was a Christian, about their religion, and they get a support from him, it was very dangerous. So they decided very firmly that they should go and bring these people back. Of course, there was some sort of good relation between the king of Abyssinia, Nagas, whose name at that time was Asmaha. Of course, Najashi was not his name. Najashi was the name for the kings of Abyssinia. And it seems that there were a very good relation between them and the authorities in Mecca at that time. There were probably some sort of business through the sea between Abyssinia and Mecca, through Jeddah mainly. So they thought that, okay, they could send some people there. And who knew Najashi personally and bring these people back. It seemed to be a very easy task. The people chosen for this were Amr ibn As, who, of course, you know, he was a very shrewd person. His shrewdness was shown later on in Safin and in partnership with Muawiyah. So a very shrewd person. They sent Amr ibn As. And a son of Walid ibn Mughira, Umarat ibn al-Walid. I forgot to say that this Umarat ibn al-Walid was a very, very handsome, very brave, and very strong man. And everyone in Arabia wished that they had a son like him. And of course, Walid was given such a son, in which there is a reference in the Quran as well. وَبَنِينَ شُهُودَ I have given him sons. Well, sons that everyone in Arabia would wish that they had such a son or such son. Now, one of the suggestions of the Mushrikun to Abu Talib, which was very funny, was that, okay, if you do not want to desist from supporting Muhammad, and you think that he's your son, you have to support him, let's make a deal. We give you Umar ibn Walid to take as your son, to adopt as your son. And of course, adoption of sons at that day was exactly the same as having a son And you certainly remember the reference in Surah Ahzab about Prophet marrying the wife of his stepson after he had divorced him, and they thought, Arabs thought that no, this is impossible because an adopted son is like a son. So they suggested to Abu Talib that we give you Umar ibn Walid, you give us Muhammad. And everyone in Arabia wishes to have a son like Umar ibn Walid. Now, Abu Talib said, this is a very unfair suggestion because you give me your son, Umar, to cherish, to support, to love, and I give you my son to kill him. Is this a fair deal? And of course not, because they wanted to kill Muhammad and give Umar to be supported and looked after by Abu Talib. Now, according to some reports, Amr ibn al-As with Umar ibn Walid, they went to Abyssinia. And there is a long story about what happened on the way, which I don't want to mention. It takes up out of the context of Sira, because of course there is lots of lessons in the story, how they try to betray each other, and eventually Amr ibn al-As had Umar ibn al-Walid killed by Najashi. Anyhow, that's a different story. However, yes.
We've never heard that one. Could you not tell us?
Yes. Well, it's 9:10, isn't it? So I just mentioned this story and we'll finish. Umar ibn al-Walid was a very, very handsome man. And every woman liked to somehow have relation with him. So in this trip, Amr ibn al-As took his wife with him. And while they were on the ship, of course the wife developed some sort of relation with Umar ibn al-Walid. And Umar thought that, okay, we have to get rid of Amr ibn al-As somehow. And while the ship was moving, he pushed Amr ibn al-As into the waters. And Amr, of course, he very briskly came back and swam to the ship, and people saved him. Now, when he was saved, Umar said, well, I was just joking. I just wanted to make a joke with you. Of course, Amr ibn al-As was a very shrewd man, so he realized what was going on. So he said, oh, okay, you were joking, what a nice joke, and he just kept it in his mind. When they went to Najashi, and after everything went wrong for them, of course, there was a slave girl of Najashi who was very, very beautiful, always standing beside him. And Am told to Umara, you can develop some sort of relationship. Can you develop, if you say you are a very handsome man and you are such as a, can you develop a relationship with that slave girl? He said, yes, I can do that. He said, okay, let me see. And gradually, Umara was managed to deceive that slave girl and establish a relationship with her. And he used to come and mention that for Amr ibn al-As. Now, Amr said, no, I do not believe you. Najashi is a slave girl? You cannot. It's impossible. He said, no, I have. He said, okay, can you ask her to bring you some of those perfumes which are specially made for Najashi and no one else would have them? He said, okay, if you want, I can. And he went and asked that slave girl to give him some of those perfumes. And she did. And he brought it to Amr ibn al-As and said, look, this is what you wanted as a proof. He said, okay, well, now I believe you. And he kept it. And then he went to Najashi and said, this Umara has developed some sort of relationship with your slave girl. He did not believe at the beginning. He was very angry. He said, well, this is the proof. This is your special person. And on that, of course, occasion, Najashi was very, very angry. He said, well, it is not good to kill a messenger. You are messengers and you have come to me. But he asked his physicians to do something with Umara that died later on. And they injected something into his genitals, probably, that he developed some sort of disease that he hated every human being. And he ran away into the desert and he died there. And, well, of course, no one knew that this was the plot of Amr ibn al-As against Umar ibn al-Walid. Anyhow, a very foul story. I didn't want to mention that story anyhow. But it tells us how these mushrikun, although they were very serious in getting the Muslims, they were not desisting from all sorts of indecent things that they were doing. So, any question? Yes.
Miracles and the prophets continuing to do so.
Yeah.
Quite often we hear about the miracle where the prophet has split the moon in the month of all the days.
Yeah. Well, prophet usually used to say that I cannot bring miracles except by the leave of God. So any miracle for which permission from God came, or in fact God willed to show, prophet could perform it. Otherwise, of course, he was powerless over those. And these cases are from those cases that Allah didn't want to show anything. Yeah. Any other question? Well, splitting the moon is mentioned in the Quran. اقتربت الساعة وانشق القمر. Splitting them, bringing back the sun is something which is mentioned in traditions. And there are credible traditions about it. And credible traditions about many other miracles of the Prophet, peace be on him. I mean, on occasions, when kuffar were mocking, saying that, do this and we believe, certainly miracles didn't come. Because, of course, Allah was not there to be mocked. But if there was a hope of some sort of inclination of the heart or something like that, then the miracle was shown. Okay, inshallah, see you, I don't know when. And then we'll discuss about this story of Muslims in Abyssinia, inshallah.